Hello, Player One. Welcome to the Gaming History Club. My name is Gabby.
Hello, and I'm JP. Player One, in today's episode, we tip our hats off to the Game Boy, the first handheld that gave us the true freedom to play video games anywhere we want, and everywhere it was.
Alright, JP, so this episode we're celebrating Game Boy's anniversary actually on the 21st of April, so a little bit late by the time this episode comes out.
21st of April, so how old is it going to be if it was released in 89? So that's 35 years? 35, yeah.
Yes. Wow. Your math is correct.
Yeah, nice. Well, it was very close to my birthday, luckily, so it wasn't too tough for me, this one.
Okay, yeah. Fair point.
How is it older than me? But, like, I played this up until I was, like, maybe 10 years old, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're also one of the kind of people, basically, that own every single Game Boy that's ever released, right?
Yeah, that's true. I had them all. I did have them all. So I had the original, the Pocket, the Color, the Game Boy Advance, the Game Boy Advance SP, and the Nintendo DS. But then I stopped at the DS, and I kind of didn't always have all of them, basically.
Gotta catch them all here.
You gotta own them all. Definitely, yeah. And there was a lot of them, yeah. I think once, like, I felt kind of bad because I got a Game Boy Color, and then later I got a Game Boy Pocket, and I was like, oh, bless them, they got me something worse. But I'm not gonna tell because I would have felt bad as a kid to tell them, like, hey, you got me something worse than what you already got me. But it's okay.
You're lucky with your parents, I would say.
Yeah, super lucky. I got pampered, I got spoiled. Being an only child really has its advantages sometimes, you know.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
But I'm only humble. I'm humble, you know.
Right. So, first things first, I guess we don't need to talk about what is Game Boy.
I mean, no, we don't. But we will, definitely.
But we will.
But let's you know, kick it off real good, right? Because, like, we all know Game Boy. Let's just go right in there with some really cool facts, right?
Okay. Yeah, go on, JP. Give us our first cool fact.
Right, so a Game Boy once survived a fire in a tent during the 91 to 92 Gulf War in Iraq. Okay, so apparently the story is supposed to be a little bit more explosive because there's a myth that, like, it happened during a bombing, actually.
Right.
At a U.S. Army base. But that wasn't the case. It was just in a tent fire. But it's still, nonetheless, just as impressive, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. So the Game Boy belonged to Stephen Scoggins, a nurse stationed in Iraq as part of Operation Desert Storm. And I mean, we've got the picture of the Game Boy in front of us, Gabby. Do you want to just try and explain this picture with me? So, like, most of it looks like a volcano, like granite, right?
So, got the picture right here. You can see the screen part of the Game Boy and then the plastic part that goes around it. It looks almost like a half-zip jumper. To be honest, the plastic opened up a little bit at the top, so
the plastic has started melting off. It's like almost 100% charcoal black with little beige bits popping through.
Mm-hmm.
It does not look like that thing wants to work. It's quite impressive the way it looks. It could be like a prop in Fallout or something. It's very impressive.
100%. You can see like the red button still though, which is impressive.
Anywho, so Stefan had this Game Boy and he sent it back to Nintendo Power in the US, the magazine, which was owned by Nintendo, right? And they took it, they looked at it, but they did actually like turn it on, and to their amazement, the thing still worked, right? Like, honestly, you need to see this picture. I'll leave a link in the description. Just take a look, right? And they sent him a replacement, very nice of them, and they kept this as like a museum piece. As part of video game history, which is nice, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So that used to be exhibited at the Rockefeller Center in New York, but it isn't anymore, unfortunately. You can't see it there anymore. But contrary to popular belief, and I think it also said this like on the description, like that little tag you get in the museum next to the object, that it happened during a bombing. It did not happen during a bombing, though. And this was confirmed by Stefan himself. So I'm going to take his word for it, basically, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
So apparently Game Boy, well, the original Game Boy seemed to be stronger than any Nokia phone ever released.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, that's a difficult fight, that one.
I know, right?
This is like Snake versus Tetris now.
Yeah, so speaking of Colfax, you remember JP mentioned in the last episode that this device probably have traveled further than you, because the Game Boy was actually the first game console to ever leave Earth on the 1st of July back in 93.
And was it the first video game console out of space, though?
Yeah, you know what?
In the entire universe.
I would say so.
Yeah, right.
Well, if we don't know, does it actually happen?
The truth is out there.
So the Game Boy belonged to cosmonaut, researcher, and flight engineer Alexander Serebrov, who took it with him during his nearly 200-day stay at the MIR space station. In many ways, the predecessor of the ISS. He said, quote, "During flight, in rare minutes of leisure, I enjoyed playing the Game Boy." So, yeah, that's really cool.
Player one, guess what game he played on his Game Boy.
Is this way too obvious, actually? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he played Tetris, which is really cool. I don't know why the Tetris movie didn't talk about this, but obviously, why would they?
Oh my god, you're right. Why didn't they talk about this?
Because this is in 93 and they're talking about the history, how it came to be.
I mean, there was a car chase in Moscow involved, so obviously there was like way more important things happening.
That never happened?
Yes, okay. That never happened.
Right, so the Game Boy that Alexander brought to space was sold at an auction in 2011 for $1,220.
The Game Boy was massively successful, especially if we also count the Game Boy Color. It is in the current top four most sold consoles of all time, with 118 million units sold. It is the only console that sold more than 100 million units that doesn't have the ability to play 3D games. And as a matter of fact, the two next best-selling consoles are the Nintendo Switch and the Nintendo DS, which are evolutions of the handheld hand grenade that was the Game Boy to the video game market.
And that's out of all consoles, not only handheld consoles, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's all consoles. That's everything that isn't a PC.
Wow. Mm. Impressive. But it wasn't all rosy and nice, because the conception of the Game Boy was met with an amount of skepticism at Nintendo when they first being developed. Apparently, a nickname for the prototype at Nintendo was called Dummy Game. Dummy means hopeless or useless. Sorry, by the way, if I'm not saying that right, but yeah, which is really interesting. It's a Japanese word for hopeless or useless.
It's surprising that they, I mean, now that we know how good it would become, and how quickly it started selling, that people were so skeptical about it at the start. It came to me as a genuine shock a little bit, that it wasn't more like true confidence and trust straight from the get-go, But no, apparently during production, development, and also some very early critics didn't think this was going to amount to much,
Yeah, because when the Game Boy was released in 1989, it was having lack of backlight, for example, low technical specs for the hardware itself, even for the standard of the time, displaying only four different shades of black and green, and the pixel itself is not really clean cut as well, right? There was a lot of bleeding on the screen, so it's a bit blurry, basically.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's 1989, so whilst this was still a couple of years before I was around, I can imagine that they would have expected something more graphically impressive, I think, at the time, definitely,
If you think about it, it's basically not very true what is depicted in Tetris movie when Hank was seeing the prototype of Nintendo and really, really impressed with, oh, is it 8-bit graphics? Yeah, you know what? For the standards of the time, there wasn't like a wow, basically.
No, definitely not. No, it wouldn't have been a wow to anyone, really, I don't think.
That's true, yeah. So let's talk about how did Game Boy defy all expectations, even outselling its closest competitor, the fancy backlit full-color Game Gear by tenfold?
Mm-hmm. Let's find out. So it all starts with the Shinkansen ride of Gunpei Yokoi, which you might remember from our History of Nintendo episode, but let's briefly summarize this up again. The idea of the Game Boy came to Nintendo following the worldwide success of the Famicom, otherwise known as the NES everywhere else outside of Japan. Nintendo's first line of handheld consoles was actually the Game & Watch series that was first released in 1980, which can easily be forgotten these days, Game & Watch, unless you're really into your history or are of a certain age. The Game & Watch came with a single game per handheld. No game switching was possible since they used segmented displays with an overlay, meaning that it wasn't like pixels, it was kind of like... That was just different. Look it up if you want to see how they work, but you might struggle thinking of it as like a full-on video game, if I'm being honest. Gunpei Yokoi, he was the head of R&D at Nintendo. He had the idea first whilst traveling on the Shinkansen, which is also called the bullet train, and he was observing a businessman playing with an LCD calculator. This gave him that initial idea for the Game & Watch series. For the regular Joe, businessman, bored on a train, give him something to do for like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 2 hours. I don't think a bullet train would take 2 hours, but yeah. Gunpei Yokoi also designed the D-pad for the Game & Watch, which would be used on the NES on release 3 years later in 1983, by the way, which also is like this really big underdog kind of invention here from Nintendo, like the D-pad. Like before then, you wanted to go left, right, up or down. Yeah, you had like the single kind of button for it. They weren't interconnected. It didn't have that rocking vibe. But that was really important to give you that extra feel of control during games, right? So, Gunpei Yokoi would once again step in to make handheld history. He held a meeting with Nintendo president Hiroshi Yamauchi. He envisioned and advised that he was capable of creating a handheld console with interchangeable games, just like the NES, but in a form factor that more resembles the Game & Watch series. Together with the Nintendo R&D 1 team, sometime in the mid-80s, he began development. To make changeable games possible, a power-up to the previous segmented LCD screens from the Game & Watch series would be needed, though. And so a dot matrix display would be used.
Yeah, if you pay attention on the Game Boy handheld itself, at the top it says dot matrix with stereo sound.
I know, yeah, look it up. You'll still see it advertised right there, dot matrix game.
Yeah, that's true. Not only it features on the Game Boy itself, it's also in the product name. It's called DMG-01.
Yeah, damage.
Damage. No, dumb game.
Yeah.
Right, so the people at Nintendo internally were at first very skeptical a console built with a dot matrix display could be successful, and that's how the Dumb Game nickname was born. But the design choice for the Game Boy were carefully considered. They followed an approach Gunpei Yokoi named lateral thinking with withered technology, the approach that would ensure an accessible price and reliability of the device. So, lateral thinking with withered technology, we can see the result of this approach in many aspects of the Game Boy. The often criticized lack of the backlit screen and colors actually ensured a longer battery life, so you can play for longer.
Much longer.
Much longer.
Much longer.
I believe compared to its competitor, it's just not comparable at all during that time.
Oh yeah, we'll compare them head-to-head a little bit later on, but let's see how else the lateral thinking helped.
Yeah, so the Game Boy was certainly not basic though, and the costs weren't cut at every turn possible for its own sake. LCD screens had a range of technologies that could produce better quality image and at a higher cost. Nintendo chose to use a more expensive type of LCD screen that used STN technology, it's called. We're not going to go deeply into what STN technology is, but it is impressive And it actually cost the Game Boy to be a little bit more expensive during production. But due to that, they reduced the screen size instead, while the rest of the handheld kept the same size. So Nintendo managed to keep a careful balance between quality, cost efficiency, and price accessibility for people to buy. Nintendo implemented this Wither technology really well. A headphone jack with stereo sound, a link cable to connect players, and additional battery packs.
Yeah, so they definitely implemented a lot of things. They were quite generous with the features for the Game Boy. They weren't just trying to make it as cheap as possible, just to make it as cheap as possible, mm-hmm. and then sell it as high as possible. It was a very calculated effort from back to front, basically. Yeah. And this is how the Game Boy survived the Ten Fire during the Gulf War and how it captured the hearts of gamers worldwide. So let's compare it a little bit to its main competitor, the Sega Game Gear, which came out 1 year later. The Game Gear did have a bright, backlit, full-color screen, but it did have to be kept on life support by 6 AA batteries, and they would only provide you with around 3 to 5 hours of gameplay. And I think 5 hours is like the absolute maximum. Kind of got to be lucky to reach that, I think, too. Mm. So not only will you need a lot of batteries, you'd need to shell out $150 for the console as well. The Game Boy boasted up to 30 hours of gameplay on only 4 batteries, and it cost $90 at launch. And you can easily carry it in your pocket. That is probably also very, very well worth mentioning.
Very important, yeah.
Yeah. Game Boy was without a doubt the choice for the masses, and it was a great example of how little impressive graphics truly contribute to the success of a console. Rather, the available games, the price, the robustness, and the user-friendliness mattered.
Yeah, I'm imagining it like Nintendo came up to the stage to like CES and stuff to say like $90, just like PlayStation did.
Oh, nice, yeah. E3 style, yeah.
E3 style.
Yeah, you gotta look at it as well from like if you're a parent, obviously, or like especially a tech-savvy parent, like you mm-hmm. can compare the two next to each other and you're like, Game Boy's gonna cost me less. And the 4 batteries will last a lot longer mm-hmm. than the 6 batteries. So imagine if your kid wants to just play like, you know, very, you know, 8 hours, 10 hours, you know, per week. You know, nothing too extravagant. What's that, like an hour or two per day? You know,
Yeah. Absolutely
normal for a kid, yeah. Yeah, there's like 12 AA batteries already. Yeah, wow. A lot of money. Batteries are expensive, let me tell you. Another thing, though, I really want to mention is the music the Game Boy was able to provide. The Game Boy delivered some all-time classic soundtracks, and the sound quality was good enough to hypnotize you with games like Tetris, mm-hmm. obviously, loads of the Pokemon songs, Link's Awakening, Super Mario Land, Kirby's Dream Land, Castlevania. Many, many, many games had some really good sound and music, but it's no wonder that there's too many games to list, because there was over 1,000 games made for the Game Boy. Obviously, we can't talk about all of the 1,000 games that came out. We can't even talk about the top 100. But let's just talk about a couple that probably, you know, had a massive effect on the career path of Game Boy, right?
Yeah, certainly. And the first one is no other than the game we've mentioned before, which is Tetris. It's just like the real sport, isn't it? Love it or hate it, like golf or fishing, basically.
Is fishing even a sport? Pa.
hey. Regardless whether you are a fan or not, the history of Tetris is a unique part of gaming history. And it didn't actually start with Nintendo.
No, of course not, no.
But Nintendo's decision to bundle the Game Boy with Tetris, it was actually really smart. They didn't go with a safe bet like Super Mario Land, for example, but they went with Tetris.
Yeah.
It was definitely a wise and successful gamble. Tetris was an easy-to-play game. It can be played in short sessions, its gameplay complementing the abilities of the Game Boy, an addictive puzzler that can be enjoyed truly by anyone. Tetris's addictiveness was already known in the gaming community and helped Game Boy to sell incredibly well from the starting line. It was Tetris that would bring Gunpei Yokoi's vision of the businessman enjoying a game on the bullet train full circle, basically. Yeah. It came full circle.
Yeah, he's now managed to do it.
Yeah. And Tetris would become the first video game played outside of planet Earth, as far as we know.
Mm. Businessmen everywhere should, you know, thank Gunpei Yokoi for making the bullet train rides a lot more entertaining now.
With Tetris.
With Tetris.
No, with Game Boy, actually.
With Game
Boy. But Tetris would be one of them. Well, we're not going to talk about the history of Tetris as a game itself in this episode.
It's a deep, long, it's a very good story to tell. It deserves its own episode one day, if we get there. I mean, yeah. we've got such a big list of things to do.
That's true,
Busy. We'll get there. We'll get to Tetris. Tetris is worth it.
Or you can watch the very accurate movie.
Yeah, there was a chase in Moscow. Okay. Gorbachev was very personally invested in who gets the rights to have, you know, handheld rights.
I'm going to touch on this a little
there
bit.
There was a car chase. There was a car chase. They wouldn't put it in the movie unless there was a real life car chase.
I read a really interesting article actually regarding this that Hank said, well, it was definitely the feeling when they were in Moscow.
Yeah.
That they felt it's always rushing.
Yeah.
And you're always being watched.
And followed.
That's why it's depicted that way.
Yeah.
With the car chase and stuff. So, yeah. Anyway, don't want to spoil it for people who haven't watched it.
No, it's just a normal car chase. A real life depiction of a car chase.
A real...
Based on anxiety and fear.
Anyway.
Let's talk about another massively huge game that came out for the Game Boy. Of course, we have to talk about our little pocket monsters, don't we?
Yep.
The first Pokemon games, Red and Green in Japan, or Red and Blue outside of Japan, came late in the life of the Game Boy. The games were released 7 years after the Game Boy launched, so they launched in 1996. Without Pokemon, Game Boy would have been a great handheld console, but Pokemon somewhat elevated the Game Boy into absolutely legendary status. The popularity of Pokemon games cannot be understated. The first line of Pokemon games sold over 30 million units worldwide. The second generation of Pokemon games, Gold and Silver, were released last in Europe in April 2001, and they were fully backwards compatible with the original 1989 Game Boy. So what does this mean? The Game Boy was relevant, popular, and the best handheld gaming choice for over a decade, for more than 10 years. Kids played the Game Boy as their go-to handheld console because of Pokemon.
Is that always the original Game Boy, or is that following the development of newer Game Boy?
Yeah, so the first two generations, you can play them on the original. So mm-hmm. with the second generation, you could also play them on the Game Boy Color, but they weren't Game Boy Color exclusive.
Mm.
So you could, that's how it's like forwards and backwards compatible with the Game Boy sometimes. It's really cool.
I wish all consoles nowadays are also like that.
Fully front and backwards compatible.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah, that would be impressive.
Other than all of the impressive games that Game Boy had.
What else did they have? What else did Game Boy have?
They also had so many accessories. Successful or not, but they had many.
Yeah.
So they had Game Boy camera with a tantalizing 128x128 pixel resolution and four colors. It was extra grainy, but for the time, you know, it was a lovely little thing, wasn't it?
I know, yeah. It would play a pivotal part in teaching people how to become future Instagram influencers.
Oh, God, yeah. Because you can bring it anywhere, everywhere with you. But you can bring camera everywhere with you, too.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
anyway.
Sure.
But if you're going to take pictures, you'll need a way to get them out of the Game Boy, of course. Well, you can do that with the Game Boy printer.
Of course.
Yeah, or perhaps you want to take picture while enjoying a nice relaxing fishing session by the sea. You can use the Game Boy Pocket Sonar to help you find fish up to 20 meters underwater. I love this. I could probably just live with a Game Boy and all of the accessories it ever released.
It's like a Swiss Army knife, the Game Boy. It was a smartphone before there were smartphones, really.
You know what? Furthermore, though, what if you want to fish at night?
Hmm.
Also, no problem. The Game Boy magnifier provides its own light, as well as magnifying the immersion of your gaming. See, it didn't have backlit screen at first.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, right? Mm. But now it has its own light with the Game Boy magnifier.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
It is fantastic. There were accessories to massively boost the size of your Game Boy as well. It can even improve speakers, turn your D-pad into a joystick, cheating devices, belt clip. Yes, it was the 90s after all.
Yeah, belt clips. Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course. If you think about the 90s, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Belt clips.
I don't think so, but I'll take that.
No. Oh, no, it's people wearing jumpers around their waist. That's totally 90s. Mm.
You know what? That still happened early
2000s. No. Wait, the reversible jackets. No, that's totally 90s.
They still have that nowadays.
Yeah, but it's not cool anymore, is it?
No shame to any player ones out there who have reversible jacket. I think it's cool. So, yeah. There was even a sewing machine that used a Game Boy to set patterns. It's just impressive how many accessories come with that. Not only accessories, though. Game Boy also had other use, such as the Bible. So it was made into a cartridge so you can read Bible on your Game Boy. So that's kind of working like an app on your phone now.
Yeah, it's very impressive. I mean, it was so popular, the Game Boy. If you had a good idea to use the Game Boy for that wasn't playing video games, you can go right for it. There might be a market. I mean, how many people out of the 118 million units sold will also fish? Probably a sizable amount will fish, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, totally.
And also, probably some of them love wearing high heels because there were even some stylish platform boots made into which Game Boy Color consoles could be inserted to. Yeah, you have to see it to believe it.
It looks ridiculous, but I think if you rock up to the club with these, you will get mad respect. Basically.
That's true.
Definitely.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, these are huge platform shoes, right? Most of them. And that's what a Game Boy part fits into. It's super colorful. There's even a little Pikachu in one of the boots.
I know.
Like an actual Pikachu figurine and like a hollowed out part of the platform. It's so cool.
Yes, it's really cool. We'll link that on the description as well for you to enjoy.
There's going to be a lot of links in this episode.
I think so too. So many things that we can talk about the Game Boy. It's impressive.
Good job I don't have a character limit on the description. So while Gunpei Yokoi largely contributed to the design and the interface of the Game Boy, of course he didn't do everything by himself. Satoru Okada handled the internal systems of the machine and directed flagship game Super Mario Land. Gunpei Yokoi would eventually retire from Nintendo in 1996. Satoru Okada would carry on as general manager of Nintendo's R&D department and project manager of the Game Boy handheld series moving forward. In an interview with IGN from 2012, he explains that he's always wanted to add and improve to the Game Boy with the quickly advancing pace of technology. So before the Game Boy Color was even made, he already made plans and wanted to create the Game Boy Advance. Interestingly, he was asked whether he found it a difficult decision to include backwards compatibility or not. He said, "No trouble whatsoever. It's fairly difficult to make a new piece of hardware while keeping backwards compatibility. However, I think that it is one of the duties of developers. Being able to play all the games up until now is a big plus. Not so many ideas about how to do it were brought up. It was me who came up with the actual idea. Backwards and forwards compatibility in the Game Boy line of handheld consoles should serve as a role model for the video game industry. Because hell yes, right?
Hats off to Satoru Okada, definitely.
I know, yeah. It is so, like, friendly to the consumer. You know, like, little kids everywhere, they gotta beg their parents to get this stuff. The parents don't know anything about this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if it's like, oh, I want the new game, but I don't have the new Game Boy Color, it's something extra you gotta ask for at Christmas. Like, no, no, it's cool, it's cool. You know, you want to play the newest Pokemon, it's cool. You can do it on the old Game Boy that you got from before you were born. So, it's fine. 7 revisions of the Game Boy line were made in total, from 1989 with the original until 2005 with Game Boy Micro. All of the Game Boys, aside from the last one, were 100% backwards compatible with previous Game Boy games, growing the pool of potential games that players had available for over a decade. Sometimes you would even be able to play games that were made for Game Boy Color on the original Game Boy, such as, most importantly, Pokemon Gold. So Player One, thank you for joining us in the celebration of Game Boy, the probably most important handheld console that ever existed. And thank you, Game Boy, for freeing our video game addiction to now be played in nature as well. So no one can say, hey, you know, you need to go outside sometimes. Fine, I'll take my Game Boy.
So what do you think about the Game Boy Player One? Do you have any sweet memories of any Game Boy that you've ever had? Let us know. Share with us, dropping us a message on our website, gaminghistory.club. New episodes of Gaming History Club are released every second Wednesday, so make sure you subscribe and follow us on our social media. We're on Instagram and Facebook as Gaming History Club.
Come back in a couple of weeks, Player One, to find out if cartridges are still cool. See ya.